We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
Hi, Retail Gets Real listeners. As you all know, the coronavirus pandemic continues to develop rapidly. At NRF, our top priority is helping retailers protect their employees, customers, and businesses. We're coordinating daily with top government officials to get you the information and relief that you need. You can find these resources and receive daily updates at nrf.com. As we focus on delivering this timely information, we're taking a short break from the podcast. In the meantime, we thought you'd enjoy some of our favorite episodes from the last couple of years. We know this is a difficult time, but we are so proud to be a part of an industry that is on the front lines of helping people through this tough period, being creative and resourceful in supporting the communities they serve. Thanks to all of you for going above and beyond. And thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we talk about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. I'm Bill Thorne with the National Retail Federation, and I'm joined today by my co-host, my friend, my colleague, and fellow dog owner, Katie McBreen. Hello, Katie.
Hi, Bill.
How are you?
I'm great.
Why do you think I just mentioned you as a dog owner?
Because we are going to talk to someone who knows a whole lot about dogs and selling to dogs and their owners.
That's not a hard thing to do, but you just got to have the right way to do it. So I'd like to welcome our guest today, Henrik Werdlin, who is the co-founder of Bark or Bark Box.
It's both. The company is called Bark, but one of our best-known products is Bark Box.
Well, Henrik, welcome.
Thank you.
So tell us, how did it get started?
You know what? It's kind of like a funny story. If you want the real kind of like a secret story, it started on a cruise ship in a heart-shaped bed.
How's that? Great ideas.
How's that for a setup to a story?
We've not heard that Retail Gets Real.
When I started telling the story, like in the beginning, people were like, no, don't tell that story. It's
no,
too
I think
weird.
That's perfect.
It is a real story. So I was at a conference at the time. And if you took the cheap ticket, it happened to be on a cruise ship where this conference was taking place. And if you were taking the cheap ticket, you would just be automatically merged up with somebody else. And so you're just sharing the cabin. And so I was randomly put into this cabin with a guy called Matt, who is a very super cool guy and a very good entrepreneur. He started Meetup before, which is a very big company. I'd gone to bed quite late the first night and he went to bed early. And in my kind of drunken, let's be a rebel state, they've taken the beds and pushed them apart, but I thought it'd be very funny to push the beds back together again. So literally the first time I ever meet my co-founder is lying in a heart-shaped bed in a cruise ship in my boxers and kind of putting my hand over the duvet and going like, hey, my name is Henrik. And Matt is, hey, my name is Matt. And then we were both kind of like working with venture capital at the time and kind of figuring out what to do next and was brainstorming about different ideas. And Matt has this dog called Hugo, which he's obsessed about. And my wife at the time was kind of foster parents. We were kind of having a lot of dogs we got from the southern states, and then we kind of like rescued them and had them for a period of time until they found new parents. And so we started to really talk about that there wasn't really any cool products you can get for your dogs. And so we thought it would be a small business, something we would do on our side. And I built the first website over a weekend, and we started to talk to our friends about it. And everybody's like, hey, that sounds great. Like, if I can get a monthly subscription with cool stuff for my dog, just sign me up. When you're ready. And we're like, well, just give me your credit card. We're ready to take your money right now. And so we swiped them on our phones. And so after the first month, we were about, I think we had 70 accounts or something like that. And then we're like, holy moly, now we actually have to do this stuff. Luckily, we ran into Carly Strife, our third co-founder, who had just been setting up Uber in New York. And she is a complete dog nut also. And she was like, hey, I'll help with that. And so it wasn't really kind of like one of those stories where we sat down and made a big audit of an industry. It was kind of something that happened very organic. So that's the true story.
Well, I will tell you, we've heard a lot of stories about how businesses got started with spreadsheets and meetings. And I have to tell you, the heart-shaped bed, that takes the cake. I don't know that we'll ever hear that one again.
But I think in many ways, like now, like 6 years after, the DNA of doing something for the love of dog and really building a company that's based on really wanting to hang with your co-founders because they're incredible people. I think that DNA is kind of very much in our culture of the company now. And so when we started to overinvest in customer service and when we send happy bombs to people and when we do all this, I think it's because it came from this kind of like very good place. It wasn't kind of how do we grow a business and then flip it. It was how do we make dogs happy and do it with crazy dog knocks like ourselves.
So you have a unique customer base, humans and pets who are probably harder to focus group. How do you sort of play to that passion? Because, your company started in a heart-shaped bed. So clearly, clearly there's a lot of passion there. How do you play sort of to the passion that people have for their pets? And then how do you reach the pets?
I think the reality is of new brands today and new companies, they have so many touch points with the outside world that it's very difficult to, like, if you're not authentic, then the audience very quickly kind of sniff it out. And so what we do is we really make sure that everybody in our company is as crazy about dogs as the three of us founders are. And I think that's the good start. And so in many ways, you build something that you would use yourself, like all the products that we make at Bark, we play with our own dogs and we give it to our own dogs before we send it out. And I think that just, it starts there. Then of course, we spend a lot of time listening to our customers, and those are smart, passionate people. And they're very willing to tell us about stuff, you know, like both of you guys, when before we started the interview, was quick to show your dogs. And just by seeing the pictures in their environment, I can already tell a little bit about what kind of dogs they are, what kind of play style they're probably kind of mostly into. You showed me a picture from kind of like a more farm area. So this would be a toy that would need to work better on the outside. And you showed me a dog where your dog was playing with your kid. And so therefore, it needs to be something that worked more inside. And so what we do is we spend a lot of time trying to talk to our customers. Half of our staff are in our Happy team. And the Happy team is really our heart of our company. They talk to our customers all the time. And they do that by obviously picking up the phone when they ring, but they also reach out to them, send them text messages and saying, hey, is your dog one of those dogs that lies, sleeps on the back or sleeps on its paws? And when you ask those kind of questions and you go with good intention, then people are very willing to answer. And so the way that we really engage with our customers and the way that we feel a better products company is to really have that dialogue with our customers and then extract that information and then put that into our product development cycles.
I would assume, and certainly it was my case, where somebody recommended BarkBox, I would assume that that's a big part of your business. I mean, it's just customers telling other customers, word of mouth, but it's got to be beyond that. How do you market beyond that?
Well, I think actually the core of the reason why we've grown as quickly as we have is because of that. We have a net promoter score that's higher than Amazon and Apple. And that is because that we obsess about keeping our customers happy. And we do that, I think, partly because we think it's good business, but partly because like we're dog owners ourselves. We know how important it is that somebody very serious about like what they do when they provide something for our dogs. And so the core of everything we do is to make sure that people are so happy that they'll tell their friends about it. Now, then you can apply technology on top of that, you can be good of having a very big social reach. We reach 30, 40 million people a month using our content channels. And then we become very good of using Facebook as an acquisition tool to do that. We become very good of encouraging referrals, tapping into influencer networks and stuff like that. But at the core, it's just creating a very good product and then trying to think about like how do you make it so awesome that you will talk about it. A kind of a trick, if you like, is to understand the nature of how do you give a customer almost an object or an opportunity to talk about your product to somebody else. And so one of our product lines, for example, on the Bark Shop, which is our e-commerce business, is called Lights, Camera, Bark. And it's products that are made to be Instagrammed. And so these are funny things that you can, like the speech bubble that you could put next to your dog. Or it's.
I've never Instagrammed a photo of my dog.
Well, most people Instagram them twice
a
week.
She might have her own hashtag.
I think a lot of them have been their own Instagrams.
I was encouraged to start one when we got her, but.
We have 500 dogs on payroll, which are these celebrity dogs that we've helped kind of build. A lot of these accounts have over 1 million followers.
Wow.
So this is real. And so we really tapped into this, well, how can we also use our products to allow our audience to tell a story about their love for their dogs and all these cool things they do. And that's kind of part of, like, if you like, the technique of how we try to grow.
It is interesting to me because growing up, we were not, we didn't have pets, really. My dad, when he married my mom, she had a dog and it got hit by a car. And she was so distraught over it, he swore that they would never, ever have a dog. And so we never did. And I kind of always wanted to have a dog. I went in one day to get a present for somebody at a dog store, and they were having a pet adoption outside. Well, the rest was history. And it is amazing to me how transformed you become and attached you become to this thing, and how much people got really tired of me talking about my dog, because it was like every conversation, you know, Louie did this, Louie did that. And so, you know, tapping into that absolute just love for your animal and then creating a community where you don't feel like a freak when you post on Instagram or you put something on Facebook and other people say, oh, that's cute, that's really great. Because, you know, there's a lot of people out there going, what a freak. You know, they're doing that with their dog. So I would think that the community that you're building is really a big part of your success.
I would think so. I would kind of caveat it a little bit. I don't think that we're building a community. The community is already there, as you're suggesting,
truly.
Right? Like, we're just like humbly try to kind of like introduce ourselves to it and maybe give people a little bit more permission of saying, hey, crazy dog lady, that's me, right? You know, like, and we have one of our products that sells very well. It's a tote bag where it says crazy dog lady. Yeah. And like people go like, oh, that's me. And then they're proud about it. When we do social videos, like we had a rap, a mom dog rap, where a bunch of our content people kind of made a rap about how much they love their dogs. And everybody's like, this is totally me. And they put their friends in their names in the comments. And I think in many ways, like this happened in the kids space. Like if you look 80 years ago in the kids space, you know, there was no theme parks and there was no Disney World. There was no Mattel. There was nobody would think about buying a $60 toy. And what we see is that the humanization of dog is kind of taking the dog in the same kind of path as we did with our kids, where we say this is a member of the family. It's not just a pet that lives outside. And if we can buy it good food or we can buy toys that we can play with together, then we should do that. And that's been very much kind of like the ethos that we've been working around and are still trying to perfect.
So this is sort of a selfish question because my dog destroys every toy we give her. I mean, like, annihilates it. What does product development look like? I know, right? I mean, I'm secretly proud of her because she's clearly very strong. But I'd also like a toy to last beyond 3 hours.
Yeah.
What does product development look like?
So that specific case is, you then dive into details with that. We have different kind of play types within destruction. So we have something called thrashers. We have something called defluffers. And sometimes the dog will have a specific type of destruction that they would like to do. And we build toys for that.
Oh, so that's part of the play is the destruction.
Part of the play. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, we talk about destruction as a bad thing. This is a natural behavior of the dog. And we should encourage it. They should destroy our toys, not like your
furniture.
Shoes.
Not the furniture. Shoes.
Right. But the dog will pick that up like very quickly if you provide them with the right toys. And so there's different things you can do. One is that you can lean into the destruction. And so we have some toys that, for example, defluffers, which are a product type, they're filled with more fluff than the other toys. And it is because the dog will then get excited when like all this fluff gets kind of out, right? This is like the firework for a dog.
I might Instagram that.
And then you have toys that are just very difficult to destroy. And so, for example, we have a box called the Super Chewer box.
I need that.
And the Super Chewer box.
I'm going online.
So Super Chewer is the box that are made for dogs like yourself. And then you have to be very elegant. Like we do a lot of research in material design, right? And so we've done toys that are indestructible, but then suddenly the gums of the dog will start to bleed. And they're like, okay, we can't make it all Kevlar, right? You know, we can't just like, so now then we have to turn a little bit back and like think about how do you use bacon infused nylon, edible nylon, which is tough to destruct, but it's still fun. But you also want the dog to be able to destroy that. That's the whole purpose of it. And so we spend endless amount of time researching that specific case, and then we build products. And so for you, you should get the Super Chewer box.
I would assume it's not weird then. My dog, Roscoe, just goes for the squeaky. As soon he'll destroy. He gets the squeaky, and that toy is done. So
that's a squeaker seeker. and this, so a squeaker seeker
is a squeaker seeker of a dog.
A squeaker seeker of a dog.
Great.
Gonna go home.
Is that normal?
Go home and break it to him.
Is this bad?
Let's just talk a little bit about that.
What's next?
He's gonna need hours of therapy after this.
Go into ismydognormal.com. No, it's all good.
No,
so a squeaker seeker is also a specific toy. And so, for example, with Target, we have Destroy Us Club, which is a product line where we have different things. We make small labels where we say this is for a defluffer, or this is for a destroyer, whatever it is. And so very normal. One thing I'll just like care about is very specific with that type. You have to make sure that you look at the dog when they try to get hold of the squeaker, because it could be dangerous if they swallowed it. And so
he is really good. He tears it apart, gets the squeaker, spits it out, toy's done. It is over.
He's a cautious squeaker seeker.
Yes.
We look a lot. We have probably tested 180 different squeakers. And so we have like this squeaker board at the office, which different
that would
types
be nirvana
of
for Roscoe.
Yeah, just going to be like, heaven.
Are you going to volunteer him for a focus group?
Really? Yeah, I think I should.
We do that. We think about different sounds, different textures, how we can make them, how they work better in the product. For example, for somebody like him, we have a toy type where they can destroy the outside of the toy, and then inside there's a new toy, almost like kind of like a Russian doll kind of setup, right?
Pretty awesome.
And so we, I was on Reddit the other day, and somebody sent me a link saying, "Hey, you guys are trending on Reddit," and it was because that we've had this toy that looked like a cactus, and it was a happy cactus, but then when you destroyed it, there was like a sad cactus inside. And so people like were starting to discover that we had almost these Easter egg buried inside, and the dogs would kind of discover them.
That's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
So you mentioned Target.
Yep.
How's that going? And how did that come about?
What is it?
Target is...
he said we've got to drop this product to Target, so...
Target in general, we wanted to find a way of really getting our products out to more people, and also starting to introduce... So two things. We wanted to get the products that we knew was performing well into more people, and Target have this incredible footprint across the country. Like, there's like, I don't know, 30 million people going past an end cap every month, which is obviously a very large audience. And they were really cool and came to us and said, like, what can we do together? And so we looked at the best products we had, the products that had very high net promoter scores, and then we made a new kind of a collection together with them that we put in their stores and been very happy with that.
I could go on talking, well, it's talking about dogs, talking about something that we love, and so I could go on forever and ever. And I know that a lot of people believe that I could, and I would, but I can't.
You would.
I was just told that we need to start wrapping things up, and I'm sorry that this has gone by so quick, but we do have a part of our program that we call Rapid Fire.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is Rapid Fire, thanks to our sponsor, PwC.
So what we're going to do is we're going to ask you a series of questions, and all we want you to do is just tell us the first thing that comes to mind.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. So let's get started. Go ahead, Katie.
Dogs, allowed or not allowed on the furniture?
Allowed.
Pizza or burger?
Both.
Last thing you bought?
Oh, that was a book.
What was the book?
It was about communications. It was this the guy from The Mesh, the TV show.
Yeah.
And so he's wrote this very cool book about
very interesting
communication.
I'll have
What's
to check
the
it out.
App that you can't live without?
You know what? Lately, I've gone really into Headspace, like the meditation app.
Oh, I love it.
So
it's great.
I was never too much into meditation before, and now I swear by it.
Next place you're traveling to?
Going to London in a few hours.
Oh.
Wow. Neat. Have fun. And no pun intended, what's your biggest pet peeve? Thank you.
You know what?
Thank
you should not get me started. My best pet peeve is probably dog puns. There's a lot of Race the Wolf, and that is possum in our office. I would say a pet peeve in our office is that we don't allow paw prints as a iconography in any of our designs, because I think it's lazy.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's stylish. And so we have this thing called ban the bone or no paw prints. And that's because if my design teams get too lazy and they don't think that they've been thinking enough about how to make a product elegant, then I look unhappy.
Henrik, thank you so very much. I want to know if any of our listeners want to learn more about your company. Where do they go?
They go to BachBox.com to get the box. And then I would go on BachBox on Facebook or Instagram to follow Crazy Dog People.
Excellent. I really appreciate that. And we are following. Henrik, thank you so much again.
Thank you so much.
Katie, thank you for being with us today as a co-host.
One crazy dog person to another.
And thank everyone out there listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. We're going to post more information about the topics we discussed today on our website, retailgetsreal.com, where you can find links to other episodes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.